The following message is from Christ Community Church in Athens, Georgia. For more information and sermons, go to www.christ-community.com. Thank you for listening.
Good morning. Our reading this morning comes from Psalm 23. You can follow along either in your Bible or it'll be up on the screen. It says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever."
So this summer, my family, my wife and my three boys, who are 13, 10, and 7, we are watching through all the Marvel movies. Well, except for the first Hulk movie, because that was trash, but we've been watching through the Marvel movies. We made it through Avengers, so we watched Iron Man. And again, Iron Man is about Tony Stark, this genius billionaire playboy philanthropist who is kidnapped and in the act of being kidnapped is critically wounded. And in order to keep himself alive, he builds this device called an arc reactor that not only protects him, but it powers this armor called Iron Man. And that's all well and good through the first movie, but in the second movie, the element that is fueling the arc reactor, which is palladium — I didn't even know that was in the periodic table, I'm not very good at the science — it's poisoning him. And so part of the plot line in Iron Man 2 is him having to discover how he is going to save himself. And he, because again, he's brilliant, a genius, he invents a brand new element. And not only does it save him, it powers him. Not only does it protect him, it provides even more power for him and the Iron Man armor. Now, as far as I know, you and I don't have an arc reactor inside our chest in our future, okay? But we still connect with the story because every single one of us is critically wounded. I don't think we have to work hard to come to grips with the fact that our heads and our hearts and our hands don't work the way that they should. Every single one of us, and again, you look around this room and nobody has the same exact story. There are no two people who are exactly alike. We bring beliefs and behaviors that shape attitudes and actions that we believe, if you put that together, will give us a life that is good. We could call it the good life. Now, it's different for everybody, and it's different for you, it's different for me, it's different in every culture and every generation, but across cultures and generations, in general, the idea of the good life is the idea that if I could just be healthy and happy, I'd have everything that I need. I really wouldn't need anything else. As long as I'm healthy and happy, I'm good. The problem is that what we have created doesn't work well. It's actually poisoning us. So here we have our idea of the good life, and no matter what we have, no matter how healthy we are, no matter how happy we are, there's this consistent impulse inside us that says, you know, it could be better. If we just had a little bit more, if you just worked a little bit harder. I mean, it starts when you're a toddler and you look around and your parents and grandparents and aunties and friends and family have filled this house with toys. But your little other toddler buddy comes in carrying a toy and the billions of other things that you have in your house don't matter. All you want is that. And then you get into middle school and you want a smartphone. And you get into high school and you want a car, and you graduate high school and you just want to figure out job, and you'd like to figure out money, and then you start thinking about marriage and family, and if I just had those things, I'd be good. And then you start, you know, looking around and looking at life and say, man, it'd just be great if we could take the kids to Disney World, and it would be really great if I could get to the Taylor Swift concert. And then you get there and go, I really wish I had those seats. And then you just continue to work on and on it goes until you're sitting around looking and say, you know what? I just want my kids to grow up and be healthy. And then as they get healthy, it's like, I just want them out of the house. And then you realize when you want that for them, then you don't have physical control over them, and then you're just hoping that they stay sane. And then you're just looking around and you're going, hey, can we make it to retirement? And then it's like, can I die easy? And all these things that we continue to have, and this is the world that we want. The life we have is never good enough. There's always something just a little bit better and a little bit more. Now, you're not crazy for wanting any of that. You're not crazy for wanting the good life. You were made for that. The challenge and the struggle is that the things that we build our life around aren't good enough. They don't satisfy enough. They don't sustain us. They poison us from the inside out. So as we kind of start this new chapter for us, we have kind of winding up the summer, and it's school time in Athens. Elementary school kids, middle school, high school, university is starting back. This kind of feels like the start of a new chapter. So what I want to do is I want to basically go, hey, why don't we take a few weeks and why don't we walk through what it looks like for you and me and us and everybody breathing air in this city to live the good life? Because the idea isn't that you should just stop struggling and settle, nor is it that you should continue to struggle the way that you have been struggling. We need to kind of reset the deck. We need to basically recalibrate and go, okay, so what is the good life and how do I live this out? So that brings us to Psalm 23. So Psalm 23 is part of a collection of songs, of prayers that were gifted to us to bless us, that were gifted to us to convince us that we have been provided for and that we are protected. So Psalm 23, if you're looking at it, basically teaches us three things. In verses 1 to 3, Psalm 23 teaches us that we are living the good life, that our life is full of good things. In verses 4 and 5, Psalm 23 teaches us that we are living the good life, that our life is impervious to fear. And then in verse 6, Psalm 23 teaches us that we are living the good life, that you and I are living today completely free. Our life is full, our life is free from fear, and you and I are free. That's what Psalm 23 is there. So what Psalm 23 puts in front of us is this incredible, audacious statement that the Lord is my shepherd, that God is my shepherd, and I shall not want. I do not lack anything that I need. I have everything that I need no matter what is happening. That no matter what is happening right now, it is not some time off in the future, it is not a reminder of something that was true for me in the past, but right now, no matter what is happening to me, I have absolutely everything that I need. That's the good life. Now, every other religion, every other philosophy, every other way of life is going to do one of two things with the idea of the good life. One, they're going to reduce the good life down to the possession of good things. Or, understanding that that isn't going to be universally true for everybody, they basically tell us to take our desires for good things and to push them aside. Christianity is the only way of life that does two critically important things. And this is helpful for us both if we are part of the Christian faith. We would embrace and call ourselves followers of Jesus. And for those of us who find ourselves quite skeptical, wondering if this is good for ourselves and good for the world. The scriptures, the way of Jesus, promises two things. One is, there is a life so good that it is filled with good things, but it is not dependent upon those good things in order to be good. And second, it secures that life. It isn't just the promise that that could be true, but it says that because of Jesus and because of who he is and what he has done, this life that is filled with good things but isn't dependent upon good things in order to be good, that is yours, and nothing, absolutely nothing, can change that. So what I want to do for a few weeks is I want to basically walk through Psalm 23, and I want to basically build it around the question that you see on the screen. How do I live the good life? If there is a life that is that good, that at every turn and at every nanosecond, I have exactly in everything that I need in order to thrive and flourish in that moment, if that's true, how do I live that out? And so what I want to do for the next 3 weeks is just build week after week on that. And so I need to start here with you and say this, that the way in which you and I live this good life is by trusting God. That's the answer, two syllables. I mean, this is the question underneath all questions about humanity. If there is a life like this, how do I live this out? And it comes down to two simple words that mess with our head and our heart. You want to live the good life? Trust God. Now, when you hear that, how do you feel? What happens inside of your heart when you hear a simple directive? Hey, this life is available. It's yours. All you have to do is trust God. Does that fill you with peace? Does that fill you with love, hope, and joy? Does it fill you with anxiety? Does it fill you with fear? Does it fill you with outrage and disgust? Are you filled with sadness and shame and guilt? Probably a mix of the good and the bad, right? That the reason why we pay attention to how we feel, with the simplicity of this call to trust God, is because our emotions are the window into our soul. And embedded in our soul is this quest to figure out, what do I believe in and who do I trust? And so we need to wrestle with two significant questions if we're going to settle the issue of whether or not we trust God, because that is my question for you. Do you trust Him? Wherever you are, whatever's going on, however you would describe yourself, do you trust God? If you do, then you understand the way of experiencing the good life. And if you don't, So who is this God? That's my first question. If we're going to trust Him, we need to know who He is. This is what the Bible is about. The Bible is not simply a game plan for your life. The Bible is ultimately about who God is and what He's done for you. And in Psalm 23, verse 1, when you look at it, it says, "The Lord is my shepherd." And when you look at that word Lord, and it's all in capital letters, that's a clue for us. It's not simply a title. We're not talking about Lord in the way that we talk about Lord Vader. It's not talking about a job description. It's not talking about a thing that you do. It's not talking about, hey, you lord this over somebody else. It's not really what we're talking about here. This is an actual name of God that has been lost over centuries of translation. And so when I was thinking about how in the world do we help you and how do I help myself and how do we help each other figure out, hey, what are we talking about? Who is this God? I remembered a video that I saw a little while ago from our friends at the Bible Project, and we have a Bible reading plan. We're reading through the entire Bible this year, and we kind of grabbed that from these guys at the Bible Project. I'll talk more about the Bible reading plan later this morning, but they actually answer this question. They actually talk about the Lord who we're talking about here. So what I want to do is I just want to give you an opportunity to watch this video, to again learn, to deepen our understanding of who this God is so that we can talk about after that what it takes to trust Him. So this video is going to help us answer the question, who is God? All right, so y'all got it? So here we have God, Yahweh, the Lord, Psalm 23, the one who was and is and always will be. David is experiencing that God as a shepherd. Now, we don't know exactly when David is writing this. We don't know if he's writing this as he was working vocationally as a shepherd, which he did when he was younger, or if he's writing this and when he became king of God's people or somewhere in between. We don't know. But he understands what a shepherd is, and I want to just translate real simply an easy way for you to walk away with this and go, this is what we're after here when we say the Lord is my shepherd. Because not a lot of sheep farmers sitting here in this room this morning. One word, provider. That's what a shepherd does. It's not the only thing a shepherd does, but here, what David is pulling out for us is that when you see this idea that Yahweh is a shepherd, it is that our God is a provider. And you could just read through this. How does He provide? David says, "The Lord is my shepherd. He is my provider. He makes me lie down in green pastures." You want to know what kind of sheep lie down in green pastures? Those who have already had all they need to eat. It's not easy to find green pastures in the time and place where David is writing from. And if you have a sheep that are surrounded by green grass, they're going to eat it until they're full. It's a reminder to us that for all that we don't have in this world, that we can look around and when we see grass that is green and trees that are green, trees we can climb in, trees we can eat from, skies that are blue, when you have these material things that you can put in your hand, it's a reminder that God has given us very good things to enjoy. Our God is a shepherd, and when He is our shepherd, our life is full, filled with good things. There's always the question, well, do I have enough? Like, I'd like to have a little bit more. Maybe I have too much. How do I know? David says here, "The Lord is my shepherd. He's my provider. He leads me beside still waters." There are two seasons in the land where David lived. There is a rainy season and a dry season. It was never just enough waters, either too much or too little. And so as a shepherd, if you're going to provide day after day after day for the sheep, oftentimes shepherds would have to build wells where the water wasn't moving anymore. It was still. But I want you to notice something here. When you look at this in verse 2, and it says, "He leads me beside still waters," it's not that he's saying that he led me to still waters. He led me beside still waters. Guess what? They've already had all they need. There's this ancient Hebrew prayer that basically says, "God, give me neither riches nor poverty." By the way, we're really bad barometers when it comes to whether or not we have riches or whether or not we're impoverished. But whatever that looks like and whatever that is, give me just enough. Don't give me too much. Don't give me too little. There's a God who provides for you, who's in control, who knows exactly what you need. And it's His task. It's His work. It's what He does to not give you too much and not to give you too little. And so I can look at my life right now and look what I have and what I don't have and go, this is exactly what I need right now. How are we feeling? The Lord is my shepherd. The Yahweh is my provider. He restores my soul. A good shepherd wants every sheep to thrive. He wants to give them the food and water that they need in order to thrive. He wants to keep them moving and not become stationary. At the heart of human existence, beyond even food and water, what you and I need in order to thrive is a soul that is whole. And when God is our shepherd, our life is full. Because He is reweaving our life into His. And He's not done yet, and that's why you don't always feel this way. That's why you don't always feel like everything is the way that it should be, because it's not yet. But what He's telling you is that He's in process, and as He's in process, He has provided you and given you everything that you need as He is restoring here. The language here is He restores my soul now. He restores my soul now. 5 seconds later, 1001, 1002, 1003, 1004, He restores my soul now. This is the work that He does. He is making you whole. He is making you holistically all that you should be, even through the ups and downs in life. The Lord is my shepherd. Yahweh is my provider. He leads me in paths of righteousness for His name's sake. You can imagine being a sheep, and you see green grass, but it's on the other side of a river. And you just go, it's like, it's right there. Just go across, can we just go across the water? It's right there. But your shepherd is leading you down the stream, because He knows what you don't know, and that is that if you try to cross the stream right here, it's too deep for you and you'll drown. The literal translation here goes something like this. He leads me in roundabout ways to get where I need to go. We all have had, we have pages, we have chapters, major sections in our story where we thought life should have gone one way and it went a different way, and we come out on the other side and go, yeah, I mean, I've got some baggage and I've got some scars, but I'm where I need to be. Why? Because the Lord is our shepherd, and our shepherd is the Lord. He knows all. He does all for your good, to provide for you. And for those of us who are in the room that goes, God will do that for somebody else, but He won't do it for me because honestly, I'm a throwaway. I've been thrown away my whole life. Or there are parts of my story or my entire existence that I feel like really we should just kind of just, if I just ignore, there's no way that God would want to provide for me because of me. And so when you see this phrase at the end of verse 3, that he leads me in paths of righteousness, he goes, here's the right way to live. Here's the way you should go. Here's the wise way. Here's the courageous way. It might be baffling, it might be frustrating, but God is taking you where you need to go, and he's doing it for his sake, not for yours. No, you're not as great as everybody might tell you that you should be or want to be or think you might have to be in order to matter in this world. God doesn't play those kind of games with you. You're really the awesomest, most incredibleest person that's ever walked the planet of the earth. If that's the bar, none of us will ever come close to reaching it. But if there's a God who is all of that and infinitely more, and he does this for his reputation, he cares about you for his reputation, that if he doesn't do all these things for you, if he doesn't provide for you, if he doesn't give you all that you need at every single moment in your life, that he ceases to be God, that should help us to believe that it's possibly true, that I don't have to just look at my own story and my own past and even my present situation, circumstances, or self-evaluation and believe that this is what's going to be the terminator of whether or not I'm loved, whether I matter, whether God's provided. He will provide, because if he doesn't, he ceases to be God. God is your shepherd. He is your provider. Do you trust him? Not as well as we should be, right? As we should, right? Some of us not at all, of course, and some of us maybe walked in and was like, I'm kind of acing the faith and trust exam, okay? I would say for most of us, we would say, it's really hard to trust him when things aren't going my way. We're going to talk more about that next week. But I mean, even when we look around and go, only a fool would look and say, God hasn't provided. Look at all that God's provided, and I still have a hard time trusting him. I have my entire backstory in which God has provided, but today I'm still having a hard time trusting him. Why? What is even the nature of faith? This is really where I really don't want to get in the weeds. But here are a handful of things that I think can help us think through what faith looks like and how it works. So what does it take to trust God? First, we have to know who God is. So we've been talking about that. Now, what does trust look like? Here's what I'd say first. Everybody trusts something. If you want to find a pet peeve of mine, when people talk about people of faith, I'm like, well, that's a human being. Because if you're breathing air, you trust in something even beyond yourself. That might be religion. That might be the scientific method. That might be all these things that you can trust in, but everybody trusts in something. We all have faith. The question is, what do I trust in? And am I trusting right now? Faith is an action that is fueled by an attitude, determined what we believe to be true. Faith is an action. We talked about this in the book of James. That faith is action that is fueled by an attitude that is shaped by our perception of reality. If you need that a little bit more simple, I get it. So do I. Head, heart, hands. Faith encompasses all three of these. If we're going to trust God, faith begins in our head. You and I have these senses, okay, that will re-experience reality. We come into contact with reality, including the words that we will read in the scripture sometime. We come into contact with reality, and that contact, what we see, what we feel, what we hear, what we smell, that shapes how we feel. So, on Wednesday, our community group is over, and we get our butcher box. Y'all know about this? Subscription meat. It's amazing. There's steaks, there's bacon, there's pork chops, there's more steaks. It's incredible. But we had three big chicken breasts that were in there. And one of them, somehow, it had been cut. And my wife doesn't like to wrestle with germs. Okay. So she's like, we're going to throw the whole thing out. So all three of the chicken breasts are gone. The other two are fine. We just had this little dialogue. It was short. I wasn't going to fight on that hill. So they all three go out. They're in this bag, and they go into the trash. Our trash comes on Wednesday morning. So it's still in the trash. So when I open the lid on the trash can, my senses encounter death. Whatever death smells like, it's right there in the trash can. And that creates an action. I close the lid and get away as fast as I can. All of this is faith. This is bad. I trust that this is not good for me. I should not pull the chicken breasts out and throw them on the big green egg and grill them for dinner tonight. Faith, trusting in God, begins with paying attention to God until we experience God. And it transforms our will and desires until we live the way of God. Do you trust Him? Let me talk for just a second about, and we're gonna build on this every week. I'm gonna talk about three stages of faith, and they're all real, but they tend to build on one another throughout our lives. So I'm gonna talk about transactional faith. There's a man named Job in the Old Testament. CEO, some Silicon Valley Fortune 500 company, and he's a good man. Like, best place to work and all that type of stuff, and everybody loves him, and people in the community super involved, and everybody loves him. But he's got these kids. And they don't live at home anymore, but he can see on their Instagram feed that there are some things that they're doing that are at least questionable. And so Job prays for them. And he prays for them, and he basically is like, look, if it helps, I'm praying for them and I'm saying sorry for them too. Job's a good man. Nobody can argue that point. In the throne room of God, there's a day in which angels come in. We believe that those are real. And Satan sneaks in with him. We believe he's real too. God sees him and says, hey, I know you're sneaking around trying to stir up trouble, but have you looked at Job? He's a good man. Satan says, well, of course he is. I mean, you all have this very neat transactional relationship. He does good and you give him good things. Instead of operating that way, what happens when he doesn't get good in return? He'll curse you. God says, you want back? And he lets Satan stir up trouble and mess with Job. Now, what Satan's going to learn in that story is that Job is a good man. He never broke faith with God. He didn't curse God the way that the enemy said that he would. His company is taken over in a hostile takeover. His kids are at the lake and a tornado comes through and kills all of them. He contracts cancer. And so here's this man whose life was perfect and now it's completely ruined. His wife looks at him and says, will you just please blame God for this? Because you didn't do anything wrong, right? I didn't do anything wrong. And it's God's fault, right? Why don't you just at least admit it? I'm not going to do that. And he doesn't. He doesn't curse God. But there's this place in Job chapter 3 where Job says, I'll turn over there real quick. It says, after this day, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. He says in verse 25 of Job 3, the thing that I fear comes upon me and what I dread befalls me. Transactional faith is hamstrung by fear. For those of us who would say, I trust in God, but I find myself shipwrecked so often by the things that I'm afraid of, is it not because so many of us grew up believing that if I would just be good enough, then God will bless me, He will give me a good life. And when it doesn't work that way, when we encounter a God who doesn't operate that way, a God who often does give us good things in response to the good things that we do, but a God who isn't limited by that, a God who says sometimes in this world it's broken and things are going to happen to people who do good things. Bad things are going to happen to you. So often is this not where our faith is, that our faith is less about our trust in God and more about trust in our own goodness? Hey guys, look at me, listen to me. I'm not telling you that you're wrong. Doing good is a good thing. What I'm telling you is your faith in yourself can't survive the hurricane. And you miss the blessing of God that says, in spite of your goodness, around your goodness, I will provide even when bad things happen. If you and I are going to live the good life, then we must learn to trust God. And the way we do that is by paying attention to Him. I'm just going to make this as simple as I can for you. It is complex. If you're confused, if you're frustrated, if you're ready to pull your hair out, if you're ready to kick and scream and run the other way from God, I'll do anything and everything I can just to listen to you. But I'm telling you, if you want to cut through the noise and get right down to it for every single one of us, wherever we are, whatever turn we are, then if you want to grow in your trust of God, you pay attention to Him by listening to Him primarily through the Scriptures. It's why we have a Bible reading plan, because we want to help you do this on your own. It's why we open the Scriptures every week and spend, 30 minutes or so opening this, trying to understand this. It's why we get into our groups and we unpack this and we try to apply it to ourselves. Because when you and I pay attention to reality, the Lord is my shepherd, that is reality. I shall not want, that is reality. And when we come into contact with that, with our eyes, with our words, with our conversations, and that gets into our heart, and it's a little jumbly, and we try to figure out, how do I live in light of that? As we pay attention to God, we allow the reality of who He is and the reality of what He has done to be able to help us, to encourage us, to deepen and strengthen our faith and make it beyond something that's merely transactional. And y'all, this is a miracle, okay? Look, you are made to trust God. It's why you have a brain. It's why you have senses. It's why we have logic and reason and creativity and imagination. But please give yourself permission and be kind to yourself and just own up to the fact that you are broken. Your brain, your senses, your imagination, your logic and reason, it's all cracked. So praise God, we can read words on a page and understand there's a God named Yahweh, and He is our shepherd, He is our provider, and He does all these things for us, and we have it lined up on the page. But if you and I are going to trust Him, the miracle of God's grace must come to root in our heart, in our heads, in our lives. The Lord is your shepherd. Do you trust Him? In Isaiah 40, God says, I am a shepherd, and I carry my lambs in my arms. I don't like being called a lamb. But I know that there are moments and places in my life where I'm completely, utterly helpless. In Ezekiel 34, we hear, I am Yahweh, I am the Lord. You are my sheep. You need me. But I'm yours, and you're mine. Centuries later, on a winter afternoon in 33 AD, a man named Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd. And he defines what makes him good. He says, I lay down my life for my sheep. It isn't just that he's willing to risk a little bit for his sheep. It isn't just that he cares deeply for his sheep. He says, I'm willing to lay down my life for my sheep. The Lord is your shepherd. Do you trust Him? Can we be honest? You have full permission here right now to be honest and say, I don't trust whatever this God, I don't trust Him at all. Or I don't trust Him as often as I like or as well as I should. And we can be honest about that. Jesus knows that. Why do you think He brought you into this room? You're not here by accident. We could have turned to any number of other passages here this morning. God knew you, and He knew that you needed to hear this morning. I don't know exactly why and how. He just knows that you needed to hear this. He invited you in this room, and He said, look, watch this. I'm going to cause you to trust me just a little bit more than you did when you walked in by inviting you to a feast. I have a table in front of me, and there's bread, and there's wine, and there's grape juice. Because Jesus, this very same Jesus who said, I'm the good shepherd who will lay down my life for the sheep, He says, tomorrow I'm going to hang on a cross. And you see this bread that's broken? It's my body. You could go to the cross and you could see a bloody Jesus, and he says, when you see the fruit of the vine, that's my blood spilled for you. And he says, every time you eat this, speaking to his closest followers and to people like us generations later, he says, hey, I just want you to remember. I just want you to remember what's real. It even says here, right here on the front of the table, do this in remembrance of me. This is, again, a sorry problem of English translations. When we think memory, we just think past. And so we turn the Lord's Supper into this time where we are very somber and very sorry for what we've done. And I should probably feel a little bit more sorry and a little bit more somber for how bad of a person I am. Okay. I mean, Jesus said that he had to lay down his life for his sheep. Jesus had to come. God had to come to make right what you've done wrong. That's a pretty big deal. But he did. And what we lose in translation is that in Jesus' day, the idea of remembrance was basically, let's have a present experience of both a past reality and a future hope. So yes, we come honestly and say, I have not trusted you. But to look ahead and say, look at all that Jesus has promised me, and say, but can I trust him now? So this is not designed to be, let me get in my little hidey hole, and let me silo in, and let me think about all the things that I didn't do that I should have done, and the stuff I did I shouldn't have done. It is, let's be honest, that it's hard to trust God. So difficult that Jesus had to die for that. But he did die for it, and he has said, today there is an experience that will be our forever someday where we have absolutely everything that we need both here and now and forever. So may our sorrows turn into a very real present joy. Because you and I can't see tomorrow, but we can see Jesus, right? You can see him walking the earth and healing people and preaching and laughing and crying and partying and dying for you. But he says, come and take bread and put it in my hands. When you see that, when you experience it, when you taste it, when you drink the fruit of the vine, when you consume this, you are reality. The Lord is my shepherd. He's provided for me. Drink it in. Take it all in. And let it encourage you to walk out of this room believing my life is full. I have everything I need right now, no matter what I've lost.